My name's Ron. I'm an alcoholic. And I was one of those fortunate lost souls that got to go through Serenity Park and learn all the wonderful things and get this thing kind of figured out a little bit with Joe McQuaney's help. And luckily there was one woman, well, there's a lot of women up there that are super duper, but this one woman really touched my heart. I love her dearly, and anytime I get a chance to see her, it just makes me smile. And Shirley B is going to introduce our speaker tonight.
Good evening. I'm the real alcoholic, and my name is Shirley. I'm truly, truly grateful to be among the land of the living rather than the walking dead. And I'm grateful, and I give all the honor right now just for this privilege to be able to introduce Joe. Down through the years, he has inspired me to stay on the journey. And it is an honor for me to even to be in the room with him and get the information that I have received. I got the opportunity to work with him, and from working with him, so much has been revealed. And for me to be able to stand and say, Joe, we love you. And they said in order for a person to speak is to let him speak. So this time, it is Joe's hour, and we are truly grateful to have you. God bless you.
I guess they started about 12, 15. But remember the first time I took a drink. I remember my very first drink. Remember my first drink, my last drink. That's all I'm trying to remember. My first and my last. There was a lot of difference between the two drinks, what they did to me. You know, Dr. Shuffleworth mentions that too. You know, I remember that first night with four of us together, we had a half pint of four rooms. I don't think they make that stuff no more, do they? But four roses, had a bottle and four roses on it, red one and pink one and I don't know other color, but four of them on there, but all of them would get you. But anyway, all of them got me that night. I remember that first drink, and Dr. Silver said that, I remember the, he said, what we don't realize about alcohol, alcohol don't affect no two people the same way. In fact, no chemical affects an individual the same. We're all different weight, different size, different makeup, different chemistry in our blood. No human's alike, so no effects of alcohol are different from every individual. But on us, he said, we get a unique experience. And when I took a drink at night, I got a sense of sense and ease and comfort. It came in once, but take a few drinks of alcohol. I figured everybody in the world got the same diet, the same drink I did, but I got something different. It did something for me it didn't do for other people. I didn't know that. I thought they got the same effect I did. They asked me, how you drink? I said, I drink like everybody else. No, I don't. I drink like Joe drinks. And that's bad. Drink, I get a sense and ease and comfort. They come to once, taking a few drinks. Just a sense and ease and comfort. Right away, taking a few drinks. Drinks I see other people taking with impunity. They're buying them. But to me, what's it doing to me? To me, I get a sense and ease and comfort. They come to once, taking a few drinks. And when I get that comfort, I want some more and more and more of it. And the craving trigger, and I go through well on spree. Ended up like I ended up at night, I ended up drunk, made a fool of myself, my new girlfriend, made a mess out of me, messed up her life because she ended up marrying me. Okay, and you know, all these things come as a result of this little sneaky thing that snuck up on me. I didn't know I had a disease, I had a problem I didn't understand. I went to the doctor about a couple of years ago, and he come tell me, I said, Joe, I have to explain to you, you got a thing called Parkinson's disease. He said, don't ask me about it, I don't understand. I said, what the hell do you understand? Give me a list of what you know about so I can have that next time. I need all these damn diseases. How am I get you don't learn about it? So we don't know a thing about it. Don't ask me. I said, okay, well, I've lived with it. But I remember the night and the occasion that first drink. And then the years together, I remember about 18 years later, I was standing in a place one night and I was sick and I was beat out. And I went to get a drink and I messed up. And I ended up the next morning standing in this old bar. Down here 14th and Chester Street. Right across the liquor store there. Used to be a little bar. I don't know if y'all remember y'all. You know, they tear a bar down. I remember a little bar called The Pitcher, wasn't it? The Pitcher, they called it. And it was more or less a white joint, but the white folks quit coming over this neighborhood, so they turned it into a black place, and most of the blacks was going in and out there. That's first time, second time I've ever been there, but I went and needed a drink that morning. And when I bought my half pint of vodka, came back over the bar and offered me a beer. I needed a beer to chase the vodka down. You know, it got too hot. You know how we are. So went down to Cincinnati and Company. The idea of Cincinnati and Company didn't come that morning. I took the drink and I still felt the pain. I still felt the all the uselessness of my life came through the drink. And it didn't do nothing to me that morning. I didn't get up since the Eastern Conference. And began to think about, you know, you're going to have to do something. I said, what do you mean? You have to do something. Things are going, you can't make this very long. This ain't going to last. It was real frightening to me, too. The first time booze ever turned on me. And it burned through the alcohol. And I said, I don't know what I'm going to do. I said, I'm going to need some help. And that's why I finally surrendered. I had an idea that Bill had that night, in the morning he got up. And he said, you know, the Cincinnati didn't come, didn't come. He talking about how it scared him, and he was shaken back. You know, I was shaking that morning. And I got up and I didn't go to Serenity. I wasn't no Serenity out there. I went to thank God. I went to the state hospital. The only thing we have is state hospital. Now, if you we need something, if you ever been to state hospital, you feel like we need to Serenity out. I remember in state hospital, I got out there that morning, and on Saturday morning, all the days to go was Saturday, and I got there that morning, and they took me in. I was worried about what they were going to take me in, but they did, and I see them coming in the Serenity out today. And I watch them, because I still, they got the same hurt, the same shakes, the same pains I had that morning. It hadn't changed. You know, they had lost just like I was when they come to the door in the morning. You know, sometimes I stand on judgment of these people. And I have some other people say, what is he doing? I said, well, I don't know, I guess he wants to get sober. What's wrong with a man wanting to get sober? Some of us get the attitude now. We were better than these people. They in the same. We was in the same shape one day. We was in the same shape they are in when we see them. So I think about that. I remember the person that helped me was over there. He passed on. All of them are surely gone now. He was an aide out there on the way. His name was Tucker. And they said, I'm about to give me a shot or something. Don't give him no shot. All you can get out of him is whiskey. I said, he don't need no shot. See, you don't need shots. They ain't going to help him now. And that's about the only thing they did. They gave you a shot. And they run some kind of test on you to make sure you wouldn't get them nuts sick out there. And they didn't want their nuts to catch from nothing to you. They don't worry about you doing that. They don't want you to give them your two brother-in-law, what they want. So, they checked me in and put me on in there. And this is where my life began to change as a result of these steps. Because the steps were already on the way to me through my sponsor. The steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. That Wednesday, I went in on Saturday, and it was Wednesday evening. And it was a meeting that was set up out there by Miss Cooper. Any of y'all know Miss Cooper? Oh. Yeah, a lot of us know her. Something I don't tell about, she ain't important, but she's important part of my life. I'm going to talk about it tonight. Miss Cooper was a social worker, a black social worker. I say black because, why? Because she had three wards, I think, in the state hospital. 80 people on a ward. She was the only social worker we had out there for black people. And she took care of all of, you know, writing notes from, letters from, correspondence with the family. did everything, all the black people needed. Miss Cooper did that. And she worked out there 35, 40 years doing that. She retired about 6, 7 years ago, 10 years ago maybe, but she did it for 35 years. She was there when I was there. She's an old friend of Lou Bell, so she knew Lou Bell. She didn't know me. I mean, she helped me that morning. I remember, I didn't know her personally, so I couldn't talk to her no way. I couldn't say nothing. I said, accept what she told me to do, and do it. Okay, she told me about, she'd been wanting to start an AA thing or something. And she wanted me to help her. And I was going to be the one to help her. I said, hell, I don't know about what you're talking about. What are you talking about me helping you with? I don't even know anything about it. What kind of, I can help you, I'll help you. I never heard of it before. She said, oh, we're going to get a house, we're going to put some people in, what are we going to do all that for? We're going to show them how to stay sober. I said, what about me? I mean, but she had the car before the horse, and me and her, she showed me where the house was later years down here, before you get to Roosevelt Road. And I said, she was crazy. What the woman talking about? And, you know, but God had put me in a part of my life. Let me tell you how she got in my life. And God sent the best to me. You know how she got in my life? She was in New York. She was out there at work one day at State Hospital, and she would burn up, tired, and wore out on that job. All them people running crazy, hollering at her. She said, I just need to get away. I just need a little rest. She said, I need a vacation. She said, I'll be honest. She said, I saw where they wanted somebody to go to New York to a summer school for alcoholism. And then nobody applied. And I needed a trip. I needed to get away. She said, I wouldn't have done that. She said, I had no interest at all in alcoholism. Nothing else. But I wanted to go, so I left. And I took a trip and I went to New York City. And she met Bill Wilson. And she said she was fascinated by it. She said she wasn't worried about alcoholism, but she was fascinated by the alcoholics that she met, the recovered people. She said they were the most fantastic people she ever met. And she met Bill. And I have a picture of that group. It's about 100 and some people on a long picture. And you build down one end, she's in the middle, and you can see a little black face and that whole big sea. And she told me about that, and she said that when it was over, Bill, he said, I'd like to have some of those, one of those things in Little Rock come to my ward and stay. He told me where she worked and everything. And he said, well, you look them up when you get back. You might find somebody that can help you. So it's just getting started. It's just starting out and just going from place to place. And we can't control it, but I think you got one, Little Rock. You'll check when you get back. And so she got back and she checked with downtown and they would locate the local AA group. And she met my sponsor in that group. And she asked him, would he come out? And they were trying to get around and get out to these places, but they didn't know what about them. They were glad to come out, so they went out there to stay in the hospital. And that brought them a little closer. My sponsor was one of the guys, Bill White, and Neil Burdock, and another guy named Charlie Clark, my sponsor. All three of them went out there. And so they were going to start a meeting. And we're going to meet out there this Wednesday. Cause I guess that's why I went out there, because there needs to be somebody there for the meeting. They didn't have nobody else out there but fit to go, but some nuts. And nuts love to go there. They love it. The crazy people, the mental people loved it. It wasn't nuts. I mean, but they had other problems other than alcohol. They had other problems I didn't have. Doctor, I'm going to tell the doctor now, and they said, "Well, Joe, I think he's got alcohol. He might be alcoholic, but something else wrong with him. He's dual addicted. No, but the big one is something else." Okay. So, as we went on Wednesday night, they told me, said, "You can go to this meeting," and I said, "Okay," I went out there, and I expected, but, you know, everybody else was talking, my sponsor got him, he started talking, and he talked to me this night. He had known me for all my life. He told me what was happening to me, told me about the things that happened to me, where I was headed, what was going to happen in my life. He told me in a very short period of time, took a minute or so to tell me what was wrong with me. And I've been searching all around, this guy knows it all. I was impressed about him. I was listening to him. I scooted upside him when the meeting was over. I didn't find out where this guy was coming from. Because he talked to me like he had been watching me every day of my life. And he said, he told me what's going to happen to me. He said, "You're going to die, or you're going to get well, or you're going to get locked up the rest of your life." He said, "Three choices." And that's what they are today, locked up, sewed up, covered up. Treasure. Bluebell was first marriage. And tonight, we look forward to celebrate our 49th birth, 49 years, next Christmas. That second marriage, that's pretty good for second marriage, isn't it? Okay. She was coming off early, and I was coming. We were both dangerous for each other. I was going to tell her about all the great things I've been doing. My life for it. She tell me how great the boy was going to hell in a handbag. But she had a new car. I didn't have nothing. I was kind of staying with my sister and living out of this suitcase. I had a little suitcase about that big. You couldn't hardly see the thing. And it wasn't too full either. But that's the way I came over. I'd been here a couple of years, I guess, but I came over. The night I came out of Louisville, Kentucky. And I was drunk on a bus. And had the suitcase stacked up with my life possessions, and it wasn't full. Bus down here, 4th and Broadway, where the bus station was there. Right across from there, over there, right across from Holiday Inn there. And I had about $2.35 in my pocket. I got a little rough, so I wasn't no wheeling dealer, was it? I wasn't killing it, I wasn't making it out too good. And I ended up, I worked for 2 years and ended up down there in front of the state hospital. $2.35. And my sponsor, he was smart at it. He's as smart as he could be. He was smart at it. I should have slapped him in the face. But he was pretty good. He was pretty good. He'd been in prison all his life. He knew how to roll with you, so I wasn't going to take him on too fast. But, you know, he said, I told him, I said, let me tell you something, man, I don't play. He said, I don't play either. He said, I'm going to tell you the truth. I'm going to tell you the truth. He said, I've been living with people like you all my life. And this guy was uniquely chosen to help me. He wasn't just a guy, a white guy coming down the road. This guy had a unique experience. See, he got locked up when he was 17 years old and got out when he was 19, went back when he was 20 and stayed until he was 37 years old. So he had been in prison all his life. If you're in prison, you're living with black people. And most of all in there. And they run it, and they language, everything. He knew it all. He was uniquely chosen. He had the experience from meeting me. He knew how to work with people like me. And he told me, he said, I don't care what you say. He said, I can help you. I said, I don't need your help. And you know, we didn't have no relationship before we met. It wasn't nothing. But the guy kept on reading my mail. He would read my mail. Every time I said something, he was already in front of me. He'd smile. He'd smile. He would say, "Well, fool." And I said, "Well, look." He said, "Well, I come here. Why don't you get your life together?" I said, "I got to make some money. I got to go back to work." So what you got to go back to work for? I said, "I got to make some money." He said, "What about the money you was making?" I said, "Oh, I messed that up." He said, "You mean you went to work and threw all your money away?" I said, "Yeah." He said, "You must be a damn fool." I said, "What do you mean?" He said, "You know, you go to work and come home, throw your money away." And I said, "I'm going to take care of that. When I get out of here, I'm going to go to work. I'm going to show you how to do it." Well, I had that in my mind. I'm sick of, we not come to AA, I was sick of being broke. I was sick and tired of being broke. And working broke. Anybody live in the United States and work, ought to have some money. So you can make some money here. You can in this country. You can make some money. You got interest. You got a whole lot of ways to make money. So that ain't the excuse. But for some reason, I'm working and I'm still broke. I said, man, that's stupid. You know? Same old job I had when I went in. I worked out a cow shed and they were paying you $1.25 plus tips. And I didn't care about it, but I worked for the tips. I didn't need no $1.25. But, you know, one day I was standing out there and old Sherman said, Joe, what you doing daytime? I said, I ain't doing nothing. I'm from a little job. He said, why don't you come out? He said, Charlie's got some work around here. He wants to done painting windows and washing windows and doing stuff like that. Do you mind doing that? And I said, no. Down inside, I said, you damn right. I don't do that kind of stuff. You need to get funky. I don't do that kind of stuff. I'm too good for that. You know, I'll pick up a number of plate and a cup of coffee, you know, my hand. I'll get my mouth. That's my hands and crap like that. So I showed up the next day and he hired me. He gave me $1.25. And I went to work. And that weekend, when the week was over, I remember Johnny coming and I was going to get my check cash. And I said, I'm going to the bank was down there. The bank was over there in the central office here. It was just a trailer sitting in there. Hadn't put the bank in there. He had a trailer sitting over there. And I went out there and I opened me up. I said, I'm going to open up a bank account. And I opened me up a bank account that day. And I said, I'm going to save some money. And I did. And one thing, my mother taught me when I was little to save my money. When I was 9 years old, she took me out and got me an account. And I saved my money all until I started drinking and messed it up. But I went back and I started putting money back in. I said, I'm going to put some money here today. I put $200 in. I went back and I put another $25 the next week, $25. I was saving 25% of what I made a week. And I did that until I was retired. I saved my money. 25% of all the money I made from the day I started working until I retired. And then I took some of it and invested some of it. Never made no money, never had no money, never needed to make no money. It's plenty to live on in this country. It's plenty of money to be made if you put on what you got. Right? So I learned a lesson there. And we haven't had any money problems since then. You know, money problems come from drinking. And we got rid of drinking and got rid of money problems right away. You know what I mean? These things all go to get one, take care of the other. So if you ain't got no money today, don't feel bad. But something wrong with your thinking. Because if your thinking was straight, you should have some money. So, you know, I tell people, money is just a symptom of the problem. Money ain't the problem. Money is just a symptom of the problem. So, Miss Cook and I got out of the hospital. I didn't see her right away. I guess she's caught up with her new ideas. And she'd come around and carry us out to meetings and get me and go to me. We'd go to Benton, we'd go to Jones, we'd go to different places around the place where we'd around the state where we were welcome to go to an AA meeting. And I was going down the dormitory at 509 Victory, and 2009 victory was at 14th and Scott. 14th and Scott was 509 victory. That's Ford Motor 509 victory. The house on the corner where the four ladies are. The lady, 14th Scott, yeah, I know 14th Scott is the place there where the ladies was this thing on TV or something. But that's where it was, and I remember many mornings sitting on that porch. And they finally come in and they're going to restore that house, so they kick the drunks out. They're always kicking drunks out. I mean, I don't want to use places, they come out and kick us out. So, it was quite a deal. We went through that, and we went to 24-hour club, moved to 7509 Victory. It was mostly when Neil took over, and a lot of us had a great time around the old dormitory, 509 Victory. We had a woman's dormitory too. You might not remember that, but the woman's dormitory was a place, a special place, but we know about it. There's a special place and special women over there. She's been there for years and years. I'm always blessed to be a part of that in my life. I used to go over and help the we used to go over and help the women. I kinda talked on the steps. I love to talk on the steps. Neil Burdock told me I'd talk on the steps. Neil Burdock was the only person in the town that knew anything about the steps, as far as I'm concerned. And he could tell you what they were doing. He'd be on the blackboard, he'd make his marks on the board, lay it out. Bill White was over at Benton Detox Center in the 70s, and he asked me to come down there. And I said, man, I'm running the sewer now, you know it? He said, yeah. He said, why you asked me to come down there? He said, well, you can help swim. I said, yeah, I got 17 up there I'm trying to help. I ain't got no time to come out here and help yours. And that's the way I felt, too. I said, hell, they're paying you to help them. Don't you know how to help them? He said, no. I got mad and I said, I'll be down there Tuesday. That Tuesday, I got mad and I went down there. And there he was standing there, his little hat and little stuff. And I said, well, he said, in the basement. So I went down the basement. There was an old black boy. Remember the old boy? Anybody there remember the old black boy? He used to have. I rolled it out and got me a chalk and I started doing a talk. So what kind of talk do you think really they need to hear? I said, they ought to hear the first step. First thing, if he's drunk, then he need to know why he's in here. And I can take that board and I can prove to him why he's in here, why he can't beat it, and where he's at. And so I did, and they clapped like they enjoyed it. I went back the next week, I was able to prove a little bit. It took me accident. The first step, you see it down on the video today. The first step, the way I do it, was done at Benton Detox Center. A place I didn't want to go to do something I didn't want to do. And I did that, and that's become the foundation for my life. My life work is based on that. Because through that problem, people see their solution, and they get the plan of action to get there. And that's what the book is all about. Everything I do is based on that. What's your problem? What's the solution to it? And how do you find it? That's what the step teaches. Bill said, these steps will teach you your problem like nothing else. And then you can see a solution. If you didn't see a solution, you understand the problem. And you don't need the 10 steps of recovery unless you have the problem. So these three things were great part of my life. So over a period of time, I began to fool around with this through 1972, 1973, 1974, 1975, and finished in 1975. And, you know, it was documented, we wrote it up and sent it out to people. And people began to ask for it, and we set up the Kelly Foundation, which owns these materials. I don't own nothing. I don't own anything. I got a couple of little books I wrote, like Search for Serenity. Not Search for Serenity, but Steps We Took and this type of thing. But these are not, I see a little royalties off of these things. But none of them belong to me. They belong to the people who publish them. And I get, they send me a little, so I give them a few dollars or something. I ain't say too much. But I have people think I make a lot of money. I don't know what I can make it off of. Building a new place over there for women. Now I tell you what I'm building. I'm building because I gotta have it. I gotta have it to stay open. That sounds strange, doesn't it? You know, I call myself trying to be nice to people, doing what we're right. You know, we get in trouble doing right. See, part of my job is helping people. So I want to start out, I wanted to help people, so I grabbed a bunch of men, we got them going, got them started. Men here were very successful. Then wrote a program on how the program was, what program we were using over there, how to use it and everything else. It took off, it got successful, it's called the Kelly Foundation. I got the Kelly Foundation, I got Serenity House, it runs the park. I got two entities, and they're working fine, one helping the other. Because the problem with the Kelly selling is the same problem the Serenity has developed. And if we could sell that, then we could use that money to run the Serenity out. So we had things going pretty good for a while. But then we got in trouble because we weren't helping women. We weren't helping no women. So you can't go to no company. You can't go nowhere in the United States and say, I want to help you, but I don't help no women. They'll put you in jail, stuff like that. And that's what I've been doing, right? So I ain't helping women because I want to. I'm helping women because I need to. See, if I don't get some women in that place, something's going to happen. I got companies. I got people all over the world wanting to come here for treatment. Yeah, I might not want to. We got people from other side of the country that want to come here, but they got to come here if I don't treat women. They say they want to know what the hell call every day. We get calls. People want some help from women. And it's not fair. Well, women deserve a good opportunity like everybody else. And that's what we're going to offer when the new facility is open. You're going to see a fine facility. You're going to see a facility like no one else in this part of the country has ever seen for women. And you're going to be proud to be a part of what we are producing. Okay, so that's where it's moving out. Things have changed. I haven't changed, but things have changed. What we're doing, why we're doing it. We're doing it for, and we got to survive. And to survive, we got to work together. And we're setting up an institution. That's what it's going to be. It's going to be the same as like AA is set up. It's a non-profit group. AA is a non-profit group set up to help alcoholics. And the biggest one in the world, right? The biggest non-profit group in the world to help alcoholics. And nobody makes any money. They don't need no money. They got a good business. They got plenty of books to sell. Everything works fine. And they don't have a problem at all. So that works. That's the way I'm going to say it. I've been like, hey, you don't need to come with me. You don't make no money. We pay our money to the people that work. The counselors, the professionals, the ones who are going to do the help, they'll get paid. Oh, yeah, they'll be paid. The people pay better than anybody to get paid. But they don't need to pay nobody to, don't pay nobody no great big money to run the typewriter. You know, volunteers can run the typewriter. So we're gonna change things the way we're gonna be successful. I got in trouble. I start hanging around the dormitory every morning, working at night out there waiting tables. And I don't know. I got sober after 5 years, 4 or 5 years working on the steps every morning. You're supposed to get sober one of these days. I found that thing worked for me. I realized that I hadn't made it made. I wasn't gonna ever drink again. I realized my life has really changed. Something exceptional happened in my life. It wasn't just it was more than it was something more than I ever expected. And I found out I had the ability to help people, and they were listening to me. I remember when I first got sober, I go by and pick them up, they tell me they want me by, they shut the door and look out there until I left. My car was gone, they said, food's gone, y'all can get the drinks out again. But eventually they began to listen, people began to get sober. I had the first black guy came to me in 1963. I sold him 62. And he wanted to go to the dormitory, and I got him in the, he was the first black guy to get in the dormitory. And they wouldn't let me in there because I wasn't the right color. But they wouldn't let this guy in there either. But I finally, they finally told me, said, well, we'll take him. But you have to sponsor him. I said, okay, I'll sponsor him. I brought him up and put him in there. The first thing he told me, I don't really like black people. I said, man, you better hush your damn mouth. He said, I got in the place, kid complaining, I couldn't even get in. They wouldn't let me in. He done got in, now he's complaining. Let me tell you about it. I told him what to do. That guy left, he went on back up. I think it was in Wisconsin. We were playing in Broadway. We were playing here. Someone in Wisconsin got in trouble and went to prison for it. Got out and got in AA and got sober. And called me. Today I think he got about 25 years. But, you know, I didn't have to do any recovery. I just worked with him and did what I could. Like for all the people I try to meet, do what I can for them. They don't be your sponsor. I can carry you a message, yo. And my message is, I have recovered as a result of these steps. That's the only message I got. And I think, you know, over the past years, everybody wants to say this about you, say that. The very same person say to me, I have carried this message to many people. You know, people come up to me and say, I carry this message to 500,000 people in a year. That's unbelievable. But, you know, I've had to put in position to do this. This is my job. It seems like God is my responsibility to carry this message to other people. And the guy asked me about doing it. I said, oh, I don't care whatever you say, but I know you're going to take on Australia and Europe and everybody, the world. And we carry this thing to 500,000 people in 1 year, the Big Book study. you know, I was gone. Nobody knew what I was doing. I was over there working so many days. I was doing my job I'm supposed to be doing. On a weekend, what did I do? On a weekend, I would be gone. Nobody would know I'd be gone. Where I was, where I'd be going. I might have been in Australia. I might have been in no time where. I've been to every province in Canada, every major city in Canada. I've been in every major city in the United States about two or three times. Every one of them. And a lot of little ones. You know, they said to carry the message, but I don't know. I've been carrying it. And it began to pay off, right? I got in this thing, I had to get this place built, I had to have some money to do it. And I began to work around here, I couldn't generate much money. Everybody loves the place, but they like their money too. And I'm not making a appeal from here, but from no money either. But I found it over the years, we're getting a lot of help nowadays. Some people who have helped heard us speak in different places. People that heard about me. Getting a lot of help. I had a guy to come in here a few weeks ago to give me $100,000 and met me. He said, I said something to happened to change his life about 20 years ago. And he wanted to give me something to help him with the place. So it don't make no difference where people, where they come from. We're all together. We're all trying to help people. And the guy told me, he said, when I was going to start, he said, how are you going to get the money to do all this? I said, oh, God, give it to me. And he said, give me what I got so far. He said, how much you got? I said, I got everything I need and some more to go with it. He gave me enough. When I started, I was sitting there on 12th Street in the old place, and a guy come by and told me about this old place on 10th and Gaines. He said, it's a good old building, Joe. He said, they're going to tear it down. He said, we can get it for about $100 a month. I said, let's go and look at it. Oh, I looked at the building. It looked nice. And all I had was $300. And I had a bunch of folded old raggedy chairs. 300 old raggedy chairs. And an old and a nice building. Clean but old. And I said, what we started with. And look what we got today. We got what we need. But, you know, we got that paid for it too. Bucks Rainy House in 94 is paid for today, and we paid for that last year, and we'll pay for this one too. Somebody we passed on somebody else here. There'll be a plan, there won't be no trouble, there'll be a plan there, and everything should work that way. So good to be here tonight, and I haven't talked a lot about me. Might see him back. I want to let y'all know what's going on and what's here is going to be here. And we got a long way to go. We got a lot of work to do. It's exciting to me because most of our work is just the beginning. It's not in the end. But the excitement of what we're going to do in the next 2 or 3 years. And here are people all over the country in the fellowship that talk about Wolf Street and talk about what goes on here. They talk about it like it's heaven or somewhere. And I see people walking every day, and every day wouldn't give a damn about it. Right here in Little Rock. But what they think or not, we're going to move on. We're going to help a lot of people. And a lot of people all over got the message, and they need the message. They look in the Little Rock to get it. And we're going to have the facilities, and we're going to have the things to do it, and we're going to do it. You know, we got a lot of people in this country who want to come here and get sober. Everybody comes. come here and paid $3,000 to get sober, and they paid $20,000 and hated them, and get the same thing, get something better right here for $33,000. So we can help them, and that's what we're going to do. We're going to help them. We're going to help. I got some fine people over. I got some fine help. I got some fine counselors, and we're going to help up everybody to get sober, everybody from all over the world. And get sober right here. That's what's going on. That's what we're doing our lives. And you're welcome to be a part. And anyway, we don't need your money. We need your hand, your effort. We need you to get sober so you can tell them what happened to you. And then that's what we need. God bless you.